Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. We have our own Phil Milani in the studio. Well, it's actually a conference room, but it's acting as our studio today.
Thanks for having me. This is my inaugural appearance on the DenverBroncos.com podcast.
You're breaking a 20-something week streak by our own Andrew Mason, so I'm happy to have you.
I can replace some of his knowledge, but there's no way I know as much as the great Andrew Mason.
Well, you don't have to worry. He's going to be on a segment that he sends in to us, so we'll have him on a little bit later to talk about some draft prospects.
That's good.
But before that, we had some news here that we covered, starting with the introductory press conferences by the new coordinators. We have Rick Dennison, offensive coordinator, Wade Phillips, defensive coordinator, and then Joe DeCamillis, special teams. Between these three, they have something like maybe a millennia of experience in the NFL. So these guys are not unfamiliar with NFL football.
Definitely. I mean, one of the themes this at the press conference was, hey, welcome back to Denver.
Right. They've all been here.
Yes.
And Wade Phillips has been here as a head coach.
Well, you could tell that Wade Phillips still has a lot of passion for coaching football, and he still has that humor, and we just saw that right away, immediately at the press conference.
Right, he said, "Oh, I'm not much of a head coach, but I'm pretty good at this. I'm pretty good at being a defensive coordinator."
Yeah, he was throwing some great one-liners out there, so he should definitely be a thrill to cover all of next season.
Oh, for sure, and even from a viewing standpoint, what we think he's going to bring is that aggression. That's something he spoke about. But not only that, that was something that players wanted before like his name was even, you know, in rumors or anything like that. When we talked to players at the Pro Bowl, what they wanted in a defensive coordinator was someone who was aggressive and someone who's confident. And Wade Phillips is definitely that.
Definitely. I mean, one of the things that he mentioned in the press conference was defensive players are naturally aggressive, so we want to let them be aggressive. And the thing that really stood out for me is that everybody has this notion of like, okay, one coach is a 3-4 defensive coach. One guy is a 4-3 defensive coach, and that's all they stick to it. Well, when you talk to Wade and hear a little bit about his philosophies, he's all about playing up his players' strengths. So if Von Miller is good at rushing the quarterback, let's have him rush the quarterback. And let's have DeMarcus Ware go after the quarterback. So he kind of is all about getting his players in the best position to succeed using their skill and their natural abilities. So I thought that was the most interesting thing, because sometimes in the past we had seen some schemes where maybe, like, you know, for example, just at the top of my head, like a Von Miller guarding Gronkowski out in the open. That might not be exactly Von's biggest strength. So maybe I think one thing that we'll see in this year's defense is something that you'll see Von Miller rushing the quarterback more. You'll just see guys playing in position where they're able to succeed more.
I mean, that's just in an economic, I guess, kind of way to put this, is that is the most efficient way to scheme football, is to let people who do something extremely well at an elite level, like Von Miller rushing the passer, and you optimize the outcome that you can have by letting players do what they do best. T.J. Ward is a guy who can do really well rushing the quarterback and just filling in a lot of roles as, you know, a nickel linebacker and as a safety as well. So letting him kind of get unleashed is something that I think could make this defense a little bit more aggressive. And as Wade said, it's not always about bringing, like, tons of blitzes, but just picking your spots with those.
Most definitely. And I mean, the other thing that you could see just looking back at Wade Phillips' coaching tenure is that he's coached a lot of Pro Bowl players. Even here, you know, he coached the likes of Steve Atwater, you know, some of the better defensive players that come to mind in Broncos history, Carl Mecklenburg, Dennis Smith, a lot of Pro Bowlers, and more recently, guys like J.J. Watt. So he knows how to coach very talented players, and he knows how, and this is one thing that he talked about, is he didn't really want to talk about in the past or like what's happened before, but one thing that he did talk about is, hey, we just want to help these guys try and get better. So he knows how to take a very talented player and even take them to that next level.
Well, that's what you want to do, is you want to realize potential. And this defense has a lot of potential, as we saw last year. And for them to even get further on that. I mean, you look at from the defensive line to the secondary, few teams could challenge the depth that they had from, you know, from the line of scrimmage to, you know, back in the safeties.
I mean, the defense played really well last year. I mean, they
need that edge.
Rushing the quarterback. We saw that happen. We saw they stopping the run. And, of course, they had all the Pro Bowlers in the secondary. The defense played extremely well last season. But getting back to Wade Phillips, he can push them over the top and maybe become that defense that is feared and dominant. And they're going to have the huge impact on how the outcome of the game. You know, I think we saw the defense play really well last year, but maybe now, they, like you said, that edge, if they had that edge, that aggressiveness, maybe they'll be a defense that's truly feared.
And then on the offensive side, Dennison, who went first at the press conference, he wanted to, it seemed like he kind of wanted to combat the notion that they're a one direction team, they're only in the running game. And he said, well, our main goal is getting points and first downs, and however we can do that, we're going to do that. And it didn't really matter that, you know, obviously the zone blocking scheme is what Kubiak and him have been known for, but they're not limited to just that.
Yeah, I mean, Rick Dennison has been in this league for a long time, 20 years as a coach in the NFL. 16 of them were with Gary Kubiak, so you kind of get to see a familiar pattern there with some of the things that they like to do. Of course, that's the zone running scheme. That's a big thing that's going to be a big part of this offense most likely. But he kind of wanted to go against that notion and say, hey, that's not what we're all about here. Of course, we want to be able to run the ball, but hey, if we got the passing game going, let's go with that. If we got the running game going, let's go with that. And that's kind of similar to Phillips. You know, whatever is working and whatever it's going to take to play up the strengths of the team, that's what they're going to do. Well, and you could see even last year in Baltimore, both of them coaching there, and you saw the season that Joe Flacco had, maybe one of the best seasons of his career. Of course, he was helped out by that running game with Justin Forsett, and I think that maybe that's something that they can bring here, is where they use the run game to set up the passing game or vice versa. But we saw that Baltimore offense really be able to move the ball last season.
I mean, part of that, like we were kind of talking about this earlier this week, is that towards the beginning of the season, the running game didn't have as much as an impact as you would have liked. And so play action passes, like Phil with a camera, you didn't really have to think much about that. But if you can establish that from early on, especially like the Ravens did, that opens up things for the entire season.
Well, definitely. I mean, if you look at the Broncos, and this is something that Dennison hasn't really gotten too much into, is that they're still trying to look at the Broncos personnel. But definitely, you know, obviously you and I know the Broncos personnel and just kind of thinking how they're going to fit into a scheme. Guys like Monte Ball and Ronnie Hillman and C.J. Anderson, the one cut and up the field and going, I definitely think that the players that may be most happy about the hiring of Gary Kubiak and bringing in Rick Dennison have to be those running backs.
And then for our last coordinator, DeCamillis, he's also a Denver guy. He grew up in Arvada, and now he's back. He said he remembers fond memories of the Orange Crush days, and he wants to contribute to that. He wants a special teams group that, especially in coverage or in return game, they want to be fast, they want to be physical, and they want to make a name for themselves doing that. For the Broncos last year, their return game didn't quite get getting into gear until they put Umar Bolden back there returning kicks. And their coverage, well, it had that one major problem in New England, but DeCamillis has a history of improving coverages pretty well. Chicago was back-to-back top coverage in punt returns defensively, I mean. So he has some proven experience. I mean, plus with the Bears, it doesn't hurt when you had Devin Hester a couple years ago. So they did really well in the punt return game as well back then. Last year, the Bears were kind of a wreck. So it didn't really they didn't really have much of a shot last season, I think. But he definitely has a proven track record going back to Atlanta and further.
Most definitely. I mean, 22 years he's coached special teams in the NFL. If you take a look at that span, his units have 28 total kick return scores. And on the other side, those units have produced 34 takeaways. So definitely his special teams units have a huge impact on the game by scoring touchdowns, taking the ball away. And then also some of that might come from his mentality. Of course, DeCamillis is such a tough person, knowing that what he went through in Dallas. He was, of course, part of that tragedy where their practice facility collapsed, kind of collapsed. He actually broke his neck in that.
I think part of his back, too.
Yeah. So he definitely went through some struggles there, and now he showed off that in the press conference a little bit. He rolled his neck and he said, hey, look, I'm better for that now going through that adversity. If he can bring some of that toughness to the Broncos' special teams, I think that that's going to definitely be a positive outcome, because teams that kind of take on their coaches' personalities kind of tend to succeed.
Right. And then I guess there hasn't been a lot of news since then, but I guess the biggest news since those press conferences was that the Broncos are replacing their field at Sports Authority Field at Mile High. This is just a periodic replacement. The last time they replaced it was when the stadium was actually built 14 years ago. So I think time was due. They're switching to a sod, Kentucky bluegrass. And where we are right now with it is that they've torn up the field and they've got a really big mound of dirt, and it kind of looks like a dirt bike arena, which isn't, I think that'd be fun to play football on, but maybe not the best for the players, but it'd be kind of
some of that backyard football from the younger days.
Oh yeah, like whenever you played growing up, there's a hill there.
Let's go play on it.
That's just part of the that's part of the home field advantage, I guess.
Most definitely. But looking at football, it could be an advantage because the Broncos have all that speed with guys like Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, having a more solid foundation to run on. That could be a positive, I suppose.
Players always love playing on natural sod more than they do like an artificial turf. So I think, obviously, it's a positive. But
well, when you and I were down at the Pro Bowl looking at University of Phoenix Stadium, something that they really do with their sod is that it's an indoor stadium, but they can move the entire sod outside so it grows under natural sunlight. It's real grass, and then they slide that back in. And the field looked beautiful for the Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl. So
kind of out of place in Arizona, but it was a great field.
Yeah, and so, hey, guys like to play on nice fields, so that definitely could be a positive. And, of course, it has to be done before the Outlaws season gets started. They'll be the first team to play on it, actually.
Yeah, beginning of May. Yep. I guess we got the Combine coming next week. Are you excited for that?
Yeah, definitely. It'll be my first time at the Combine. But I think that the biggest thing, like mentality-wise, is that after the season is over, fans and even us like naturally like to think, okay, what's next? What's coming up next? How's this team going to get better? And it's always fun to kind of speculate, okay, these are some areas of need. This is some guys coming out that are really exciting. And it kind of, to me, the Combine is truly the beginning of, hey, let's start looking forward to next season, because it'll be the first time that some of us have gotten to see and talk and ask questions to some of the players coming out of college, and then, of course, free agency after that, and then the actual draft. It's just kind of an exciting time when you start looking forward to the next year.
I'm definitely excited for it. I'm not excited for the weather, but I think it'll be a good time. Me, Phil, and the rest of our digital team will be in Indianapolis, sunny Indianapolis. It's supposed to snow the first day we get there, I think. And meanwhile, one of our staff is going to Hong Kong with the cheerleaders. So.
Yes.
Actually, two.
Two of our staff.
Yeah, they're going to have a good time out there while we're freezing our butts off. But it's going to be a good time. I'm excited to watch some of these players. I've got to say, I haven't seen a lot of these players. I'm not going to lie. A lot of my Saturdays are, you know, traveling to games and for the road games, and you know, we get to watch a couple football games maybe on, you know, each Saturday. So,
well, more than just watching them in the games and kind of, you know, some of the bigger names, and you kind of know, okay, these guys, you know, played in the playoffs or in these bowl games, or they were, you know, some of the bigger name guys. But more than just watching them, it'll be cool to get a talk to them a little bit, ask them some questions, see what they're like as a person, and then on top of that, some of the lesser known guys, kind of get to make a name for themselves. Some guy comes out of nowhere, runs a really fast 40 time, or some guy puts up a lot of reps on the bench press and make a name for themselves. And then, of course, our scout team is going to be down there interviewing guys, talking to them. So it's definitely a big opportunity for guys to kind of make a name for themselves and give an impression upon some of these NFL teams that could end up getting them drafted.
And with that, I'd like to thank our own Phil Mawani for coming on all the way over from his desk in the corner. And we'll be live from Indianapolis a week from now, and we'll probably have Phil and Andrew on with us to talk about the prospects we've seen. And with that, let's head to our segment from Andrew Mason, who is sending his voice from out of town.
Thanks, Ben. It's on to the scouting combine next week, of course, but as long as the Broncos don't have closure on whether Peyton Manning will return for 2015 or not, questions could linger. Although March 9th is the deadline in regards to Manning's contract, because that's when his salary for the coming year is guaranteed, realistically it would help the Broncos to have a decision before they begin their work in Indianapolis. The reasoning is simple. If Manning is not coming back for 2015, then perhaps you devote more time and investment into the quarterbacks at the combine than you originally planned. Remember, each team is limited to 60 player interviews of the 323 players who are going to be there. So if you know you're likely going to be in the market for a QB, then perhaps you interview a few more of them than you originally expected. Now, the combine is not just about talking to members of this year's draft class and watching them work out at Lucas Oil Stadium. Meetings with agents are an informal part of the week, and more than a few contracts have been hammered out during negotiating sessions that take place throughout the days there. Often, when you see a player re-sign in the weeks leading up to free agency, the back and forth of getting that contract done took place in Indianapolis. So if you see the Broncos re-signing some guys in the next few weeks, then you can probably infer that at least one or two discussions revolving them happened in Indianapolis. And then to go beyond the national scouting combine, there's going to be regional combines, including one that takes place at the Broncos' new field house while the national combine is underway. At those regional combines and the pro days next month, some of the combine snubs will have to make their mark. Of course, we all know about cornerback Chris Harris Jr. being a combine snub back in 2011. And this year, a couple of surprise snubs to me were CSU Pueblo quarterback Chris Bonner, Old Dominion quarterback Taylor Heinicke, who had a good week at the East-West Shrine Game last month, and then a third snub I thought was Georgia Tech offensive lineman Shaquille Mason. I really thought that he could have bumped his stock up with a good week at the combine, but you know, he won't get that chance. He's going to have to prove himself at the pro days next month. But next week, our focus is understandably going to be on the 323 players who will be at the scouting combine, and we'll have plenty to talk about. And the next time we sit down at the mic for this podcast, we'll be in Indy, and we will not only have talked to plenty of players by then, but also to John Elway and Gary Kubiak as well. Both of them will speak to the media at the combine and also to us. So it's going to be another big, busy week in an off-season that doesn't feel like off-time at all. Back to you, Ben.
All right. Thank you, Mace. Thanks for popping on the podcast here today. And thanks again to Phil Mawani for joining us earlier. Next week, we'll be coming to you from Indianapolis, so be sure to tune in for our thoughts on the combine and the prospects we've seen. And with that, that'll wrap up our show this week. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah, you know, I love coaching. That's what I do. I'm not, you know, my wife, Lori, wanted to get me out of the house after a year of being around. So, you know, I love what I do. I you know, I was a lousy head coach, but I'm a pretty good defensive coordinator, and that's what I do well. So so I wanted to get back to doing that, and I couldn't be happier. No, we're aggressive. I mean, defensive players, they're aggressive by nature. I think you take something away from them when you don't let them be. So. And aggressive doesn't mean blitzing all the time, but it does mean coming off the football, everybody coming off the football. You won't see a square stance from a defensive lineman, so to speak, for people who know football. you know, where you're reading. This is an attack defense, and that's the way the players like to play. You get the best results out of that, and I think you play the best that way. So we'll be that way.
We want to play faster than our opponents. When they look at it on tape, I want them to know that we're going to be a fast team and a physical team. The other thing about it is you want to be very fundamentally sound. Anytime a coach turns on the film, I want them to say, wow, that guy, you know, they technique-wise, they're excellent at what they do. And that's really, you know, kind of fits into what Coop is asking for, too. You know, when we came in and talked, that was something that was important to him, and we want to carry that on and try to get it better.